In 1999, Quebec nurses went on strike, but after 22 days, their action was declared illegal. 10 years before, women faced even worse legal maneuvering, when striking nurses lost 1 year of seniority for every day of the illegal strike. Just last fall, 80,000 teachers throughout Quebec walked out, and again, essential services laws were cited and teachers forced back to work.
In North America, the Industrial Revolution came through women workers.
Over the next 4 weeks, we'll take up these issues here on CKUT's Long-Term Memory Radio Project, Women's Labor History in Quebec and Canada, every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m., concluding on May Day.
Women have always been essential to the labor movement. The first unions that were formed by male-skilled workers who weren't admitting those women.
Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news have brought to you live.
Today is May Day, and we want to thank you for joining us on this edition of Off the Hour. We have a special presentation for you. It is the conclusion of our four-part series on women's labor history, concluding with a discussion on women's labor in Montreal today. Joining us in studio will be Linda from Eco Cafe and Boutique, a working cooperative for single mothers in Point St. Charles. Chantelle Levine is also on the line with us, a locked-out contributor to the CBC program, The Manche Magazine. And Cynthia, an organizer with the Immigrant Workers Center, right here in studio in a few minutes, but we want to give you a little perspective on today's celebration. May Day is a day that honors the struggles of working people throughout the world, from France to Japan, China to Nicaragua. Workers are celebrating with strikes, rallies, marches, and teach-ins. But the United States and Canada don't recognize the day as a national holiday. Ironically, it's in the United States that May Day, a pagan holiday celebrating the first spring plantings, was first declared International Workers' Day. It came out of a movement for an 8-hour working day that rocked the country more than 100 years ago. On May 1st, 1886, the American Federation of Labor called a national strike to put an end to 12, 14, and even 16-hour working days that were very common at the time. 2 days into the massive strike, the police opened fire on a crowd of protesters in Chicago, killing 4. The following day, a bomb was thrown at police officers, and they descended on peaceful protesters in Haymarket Square. The bomb killed 1 police officer and injured many more. The police fired into the crowd, killing at least 1 and wounding dozens. Although it was never known who threw the bomb in Haymarket Square, the incident was used as an excuse to attack the left and labor movement in the United States. 8 of Chicago's most active labor leaders were sentenced to death by a kangaroo court, and 4 of them were ultimately hanged. News of these executions sparked labor protests throughout the world, and in 1889, the Socialist International declared May 1st a day of demonstrations. In cities across the world today, activists celebrated the International Workers' Day by combining it with protests against racism, militarism, and capitalism. In central Athens, where thousands of demonstrators gathered today, banners read, "Long live international solidarity to Palestine." In Australia, police arrested dozens of people after scuffles broke out at a picket to protest against the country's immigration policies. Today in Berlin, thousands gathered at a peaceful protest on May Day in anti-Nazi demonstrations. Violence broke out when hundreds of riot police moved in using water cannons against protesters. In honor of May Day today, we're going to go to the International Solidarity Anthem. And we want to thank Democracy Now!'s editors for today's background information on May Day. Stay tuned. This is the conclusion to our four-part series on women's labor history in Quebec and Canada. We'll return with our guest right here in studio to talk about women's labor today in the Montreal community.
Thank you.
listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. The day is May Day. And just a word, I forgot to mention that today's May Day celebrations happening right here in Montreal are kicking off at 6:30 on the south side of Parc Lafontaine. I believe that's at Sherbrooke intersection. But if you'd like to join those members of Montreal's union and working community, you can go to the south side of Parc Lafontaine near Sherbrooke at 6:30. The march will be kicking off. I want to bring into the conversation now our three guests who are here in studio to talk about women's labor here in Montreal. We've been talking about women's labor history in Quebec and Canada for 3 weeks now, and initially we kicked off the program with a conversation with Lillian Robinson, president of the Simone de Beauvoir Institute, and then we turned to Micheline Dumont, a preeminent scholar of Quebec women's history, who told us about three types of discrimination working women face throughout history that they faced, the kind of jobs women get, the salaries they receive, and the opportunities they have to organize. And so one of the things that we're going to be talking about today is asking whether or not these problems still exist. And I just want to check in. Chantel Levain, are you still on the line with us?
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners about the strike that's happening at CBC. Currently, you are locked out. You're a contributor, a radio journalist contributing to Dimanche magazine.
Yes.
There. And what, in terms of what Micheline Dumont has outlined for us, the jobs, the salary, and the right to organize, how are women impacted by these issues within the CBC?
Okay, well, first of all, I must say that we've been locked out since March 23rd, and initially we only went out for a 24-hour strike to press our demands, and the employer decided to keep us on the street, and it's our sixth week now, so it's been it's starting to be a long battle. Among the main issues, first of all, is job insecurity, because less than half, and not a lot of people know that, but less than half of the employees at the CBC in Montreal and in New Brunswick, less than half have permanent jobs. So that's one of the main issues we're fighting for. And another important one is the issue of salary equality between men and women who do the same jobs. This all started because a couple of months ago, the union did a study based on paychecks. And to everyone's surprise, and I must say to everyone's shock, we discovered that almost systematically men earn more money than women. Overall, if you have time, I can give you just a few figures. Overall, for instance, if we're talking about staff jobs, men earn more than $11,000 more than women. And then if you start to look at different categories of jobs, for instance, researchers earn less than $1,000 a year, less than their masculine, their men colleagues. Women journalists, the 59 women journalists earn $2,000, almost $3,000 less than their masculine colleagues. And if you go higher in the scale, if you want, as close as you get to the screen, the disparities just grow. For instance, 26 women hosts earn less than $14,000, $14,000 less than their masculine colleagues. So this was just a shock when we started to look at those figures. And it seems that when we look at it, credibility and competence seem to be masculine qualities at the CBC. So this was discovered a couple of months ago, and it became part of our demands for a new collective agreement. So yesterday we organized a big press conference to continue the pressure. The Women's Committee have tried to gather signatures of high-profile women in Quebec and in the rest of Canada. And actually, we were looking for 100 women, and we had more than that. The faxes kept coming in, so we had 130 women signing the petition asking the CBC to respect pay equity laws in Canada. And among the women, you had two of your previous guests, Micheline Dumont and Lillian Robinson. And we had women like writer Margaret Atwood, hockey coach Daniel Sauvageau, Maud Barlow of the Council of Canadians, architect Phyllis Lamberts, Vera Daniluk, ex-president of the Montreal Urban Community, Agnès Grossman, conductor. I mean, we had women from different fields, and from actresses to journalists, scholars, presidents of unions. We just had a lot of support. And we launched this event yesterday at the tavern. It's the famous, actually, for the CBC employees tavern, La Mer Clavet, because that's where a lot of people go for lunch and a lot of men go for lunch. And we decided that we would be there because we suspect that a lot of contracts were negotiated there. Just with a beer, around a beer. So we decided this is a place where we're going to lunch our press conference and a new beer called the Bob Weiser for Robert Rabinovich, our president, the president of the CBC.
Well, Cynthia, we'll come back to, or Chantel, rather, we'll come back to those issues of why women are representing the majority of those non-permanent positions and
yes.
why men are overrepresented in the high pay scale.
Yes.
But to bring Cynthia into the conversation now, can you tell us about your experience at the Immigrant Worker Center and tell us a little bit about the issues that women are dealing with in the Montreal labor market who come into the Immigrant Worker Center?
Okay. Well, basically, before I start, my organization, which is PNI, the Filipino Women's Organization, is a member of the Immigrant Worker Center. And just looking at our experience in within the Filipino community, we have looked at over the years the feminization of labor within migrant workers, and particularly in our community, we've seen over the years the difference in the demand of Canadian immigration for the labor workers, particularly, like, say, for example, in the 60s, they needed healthcare workers from the Philippines, so they came in as nurses and healthcare workers. 70s as textile workers, and since the 80s, we've been dealing with a lot of majority women who have been coming in, Filipino women who have been coming in as live-in domestic workers. The Immigrant Workers Center deals with workers' issues, and the women domestic workers are also a part of the struggle for the rights and welfare of the workers that we're trying to put forward in the Immigrant Workers Center. So basically, with the women in the Filipino community that I'm dealing with, these women who come in as professionally trained in our countries in different professions like nurses, dentists, engineers, et cetera, they come in here, they're forced to migrate to Canada due to poverty in the Philippines, but they come in here as live-in caregivers. And most of the issues that they're facing are economic exploitation. And for example, they're dealing with a 49-hour work week with a gross salary of $280, which only comes up to $5.71 per hour, way below a regular worker. The separation and isolation from families, because these women don't have the opportunity to be a part of a union because they're totally isolated in their workplace. Abuse, they're prone to abuse due to isolation, and so they're facing, you know, different issues of physical, sexual, economic, and like all these kinds of abuse under this live-in caregiver policy of the Canadian government. So basically, those are like the major issues of the majority of women in our community that we're dealing with.
Chantel, if the women at CBC didn't have a union, would you see yourself in a similar situation to that Cynthia describes that immigrant workers are in here in Montreal?
Of course, the union has done has allowed a lot of progress, but the issue at the CBC is that most of this discrimination is done outside of the collective agreement. What is important to understand is that this is not based on salary scales or on the collective agreement. It's done through discretionary funds that are negotiated individually. For instance, we discovered that $8 million, so the equivalent of 11.2% of the wage bill, is allocated this way. And what we're talking about are amounts given through different bonuses for supposedly a repurchase of overtime. And systematically, this practice favors men. So it's a lack of transparency, and everything is done behind closed doors. And that is basically the problem. And one of our the issues in this strike is also the fact that we want more transparency, and we want the salary scales to actually reflect the reality. And this is not the situation right now. One woman administrator said to one of our women on the committee that normally a woman will be in the office to negotiate her contract only once, and men will go three times. So it seems that we don't know how to negotiate, and also that everything is a question of individual negotiation, and that's what we want to change. But of course, the union has allowed a lot of progress, and I'm sure the situation would be worse without it.
We're going to take a brief break and come back to our panel discussion with Cynthia, who is from the Immigrant Workers Center right here in Montreal. We also have Chantel on the line, who is a reporter contributing to the CBC program Dimanche magazine, and she is currently locked out from contributing to that program. And we also have in studio with us Linda from Eco Cafe and Boutique. We'll be right back in a few minutes.
Early in the morning, she rises. A woman's work is never done, and it's not because she doesn't try. She's fighting a battle with no one on her side. She rises up in the morning, and she works till we pass us. Woman better slow down, or she's gonna come down hard.
You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. The program is the conclusion to this episode of the Long-Term Memory Radio Project. For the past 4 weeks, we've been talking about women's labor history in Quebec and Canada. And today in studio, we have with us several guests who are talking about women's labor in Montreal today. On the phone, we have Cynthia, who's an organizer with the Immigrant Workers Center, Chantel, who is a reporter currently locked out of the CBC, not able to contribute there, and also joining us is Linda, who works at and is the co-founder of Eco Cafe and Boutique, a working cooperative for single mothers in Point St. Charles. And that's a mouthful. I wonder if you can explain for our listeners what exactly a working cooperative is, and why is it this one specifically geared for single mothers?
Mm-hmm. Hi. Well, a working cooperative, actually workers, people, should I say, people get together in order to, reach a common goal. And in a working cooperative, the common goal is to create a job for each of the people. And in our project, in the project in Pointe-Saint-Charles, we decided to create a working cooperative specially made for young women with a young child. Well, not necessarily single, but most of them are. And just a place for those people to find a job and, you know, just good job, great jobs.
What are the experiences that single mothers have in the Montreal job market that these women are trying to seek a way out of, or a way of kind of, you know, not having to deal with the mm-hmm. normal job mm-hmm. environment and coming to this cooperative and seeking, I guess, a type of refuge. Mm-hmm. So can you tell our listeners, what are these women dealing with out there?
Well, almost all the girls that are, who are working in our co-op, most of them didn't have a job before, and all their working experiences were like contracts, short period contracts for summer jobs, but not many long experiences. And for those who had experience, they had been working at McDonald's or stuff like that. So hard conditions and low wages, basically.
And no opportunity to organize.
That's it.
Yeah. Chantel, this is something that's sort of similar to the situation at the CBC when it comes to the situation of non-permanent positions. Like I said before, Micheline Dumont had told us in previous episodes of this series that oftentimes the kinds of jobs that women get are temporary, or their contract work, or and most often they don't come with benefits. So
Exactly, and we discovered that two-thirds of employees who suffer from job insecurity are women at the CBC. So those are the jobs, contracts, 8 months contracts that have to be negotiated every year. And so this is something that really is targeting women specifically at the CBC. And people have the feeling that the CBC is full of high-paid employees, but it's not always the case. When we don't talk, if you take aside all the celebrities, if you want the stars, people, there's a lot of very insecure jobs there and not well-paid jobs, too.
Can you give us some examples of the kind of jobs that are particularly women are most hired for?
Production assistants and researchers, too. And you know that also a new reality is the fact that a growing number of programs are done outside of the CBC with private companies, production companies. So what you see is that a growing number of jobs are those employees work for private companies and have absolutely no job security, and will have to find another job, for instance, in the summer. Sometimes the season is only 6 months long, and so they have to find other jobs in the summer and never know what's going to happen the next year. And we've heard a lot of stories, too, of people who always get short-term contracts in order for them not to accumulate vacations or any other job advantages like health insurance or all the other advantages. So that's also a growing reality at the CBC. And again, it's a woman reality.
I was going to ask the question later in the program, but it seems appropriate to ask it here about the impacts of globalization. You had mentioned the outsourcing of programs to private firms that the CBC is engaged in. How has globalization and the advancements in communication technology impacted the work environment there?
Well, that's a fact, that a growing number of programs, as I said, is produced outside of the CBC, and that's also a concern. What we're seeing also is that with the technology improvement, people are asked to do more and more and do not necessarily get the pay equivalent to it. So they will have to do a researcher and part of the producer job and never get also the salary increase. So that's also a growing concern at the CBC right now. I've heard also of production assistants who will, one, for instance, in one program, I know there's only one CBC employee left. All the other members of our team are from an outside company, and they occupy CBC's offices. So this is also some matter of concern.
Cynthia, how does globalization impact the women that you're working with?
Okay, well, with globalization, what's happening now is that with the Philippine government has created this over the years, they've actually implemented this labor export policy, wherein they're not just actually exporting products of the Philippines, but basically the workforce, the people of the Philippines, are being exported, and right now there are about 8 million Filipinos in 186 countries all over the world, and 65% of that are women. For example, here in Canada, there's 65% of the entire about 300,000 Filipinos all over Canada are women, and out of that, since the 80s, these women have been coming in as a temporary work with a temporary working permit under the program that I've that's called Live-In Caregiver Program, and so it's been increasing actually since every day 3,000 Filipinos have leave the country. So that's the effect of globalization on Filipino women.
Well, let's look at a specific case. Melka Salvador had gotten much media attention when the Canadian government tried to deport her for becoming pregnant while she was working as a domestic worker here in Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about the work experience of domestic workers coming into Canada? What kind of jobs are they being put into, and how often or how long do those jobs last for?
Okay. Well, basically, this live-in caregiver, what it entails is the women coming here with a temporary work permit will have to work, live-in domestic worker, and they have to complete this requirement within this 24-month requirement of live-in within a period of 3 years. So they're basically tied to one employer, and what happens is if you're not able to complete these 24 months, within a period of 3 years, you're at a risk of getting a deportation order. A lot of women have actually gone through this deportation process because of not a fault of their own. They were not able to complete this requirement. An example of that is Melka Salvador. Because they're only entitled to work for one employer at a time. If it doesn't work out, then they have to wait until they get a work permit for one particular employer. But in between employer, the permit could take between 4 weeks to 6 months, wherein they're not entitled to work. And in Melka's case, when she got to Canada, she didn't know that she was pregnant. And when she did find out that she was pregnant, she was immediately fired by her employer. And there came like a spiral of rejection from one employer to another. And then when she gave birth, no one wanted to hire her because she is a woman with a little baby. And so the 3 years passed, and she had a deportation order right after that. A lot of women have gone through that experience, but a lot of them have been afraid to speak of their situation. But with Melka, since she was determined to fight for her rights, even if being temporary workers. They don't have a lot of rights and opportunities, but she still decided to fight for her situation, and we got a lot of support nationally, all across Canada, and internationally as well, with a migrant workers association called Migrante, which is like the umbrella organization in the Philippines of migrant workers. We still face situations like that up until now because of this notorious live-in caregiver program, which we believe is a sexist and racist policy, which basically imports cheap labor of third world women to live as to work as domestic workers here in Canada. So as much as we say that Canada is like the winner of human rights, we still see a lot of abuses that's happening in the homes of different in Canadian homes because of this program.
The Live-In Caregiver Program, what's the status of it now? Is it being challenged in any way? Is the Immigrant Workers Center calling for any kind of amendments to ensure the safety and security, job security of women coming into the country to take these positions?
Okay. With PNAI, the Filipino Women's Group, the Immigrant Workers Center, along with our network across Canada, our call is to abolish this Live-In Caregiver Program since it's basically modern-day slavery. And we've had several dialogues with the Immigration Canada, but the way it looks right now, they're still going to continue on with this program because they say that Canada still has the need for it. But what we're saying is that if Canada has a need for it, why give these women a temporary status and not just give them an immigrant status with a better working condition? Because right now, these women who are working as caregivers are under the mercy of their employers. Whether there are provisions that the employers are supposed to follow, no one's there's no way of monitoring it. And also, it's basically like a systemic legislating these women into poverty. Because a lot of these women, like I said earlier, they're professionally trained, yet, for example, a lot of the women are nurses under this LCP program. But even in the midst of this healthcare crisis with a big shortage of nurses, these women are not recognized, and they can't get the accreditation even in the midst of this crisis. And so we're saying that give this woman an immigrant status with a better working condition and not just tied to one employer being, like a quote-unquote slave of these households.
Well, we also have in studio to talk about alternatives is Linda with Eco Cafe, which is a women's working cooperative in Point St. Charles where 25 women work. And Linda, I wonder if you can tell us a bit about the working environment and how it's geared towards single mothers.
For the schedule, there's a girl who wanted a job and, the cafe opens at 7 and she couldn't make it because the daycare opens at 7. So we just gave her the job anyhow and she starts at 7:30 and we arranged something else with someone else who could, take her, just fill up the gap. And what else? I mean, we have some kind of, not a daycare, but a space for kids. So the women are invited, like the women who are working in the cooperative, they can feel free to bring their kids for an hour before the shift or after the shift. So they're not in a rush to get the kids and stuff like that. And what else? I mean, we are like the way we treat the people also. I mean, we're really comprehensive. And if there's an employee who has to leave for, for the kids or for family reasons and stuff like that, I mean, there's no problem.
Is this kind of relationship something that's developed sort of naturally within the small group of 25 people who are now working there? Or is it a response to the kinds of things that Cynthia and Chantel are talking about that come from your own working experience or the women that work there?
Well, it comes, it comes from my working experience. I've been experiencing difficult work jobs and, the way they were managing the places. So it was really important for me and for the people who I started the project with. It was really important to create an environment where women can feel comfortable and, you know, that they'd be treated properly and have better wages and good just working conditions. That was really important. And I think that it's not the fact that it's a small group and stuff like that, because I think it has to come from the base.
We're going to take another brief break and come back with our panelists who are here. You just heard from Linda, who's with Eco Cafe and Boutique, a working cooperative for single mothers in Point St. Charles. Chantal Levine, locked out contributor to the CBC program Dimanche Magazine, and Cynthia, an organizer with the Immigrant Worker Center, are both on the line with us. We'll be right back. You are listening to CKUT, and this is the concluding segment to our four-part series on women's labor history in Quebec and Canada. We'll be right back.
As we go marching, marching in the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill lofts gray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people hear us singing, bread and roses, bread and roses. As we go marching, marching, we battle too for men. For they are women's children, and we mother them again. Our life shall not be sweated from birth until life closes. Hearts starve as well as bodies. Give us bread, but give us roses. As we go marching, marching, unnumbered women dead go crying through our singing their ancient call for bread. Small art and love and beauty, their drudging spirits new. Yes, it is bread we fight for, but we fight for roses too. As we go marching, marching, we bring the greater days. The rising of the women means the rising of the race. No more the drudge and idler tend that toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread.
Joan Baez with Bread and Roses fading out in the background there. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM. The discussion for the evening is women's labor in Montreal today. We've been doing this four-part series of this episode of the Long-Term Memory Radio Project, Women's Labor History in Quebec and Canada. If you're interested in receiving copies of this four-part series, you can contact the Spoken Word Department. First episode featured a conversation with Professor Lillian Robinson of the Simone de Beauvoir Institute. She's a principal there. We also had another episode with Micheline Dumont and Mallory Peruso, who joined us last week. We want to thank Bianca Allard for all of her contributions there. On the line and in studio with us now, we have three guests. Linda, who's co-founder and an employee at the Eco Cafe and Boutique, a working cooperative for single mothers in Point St. Charles, as well as Chantel, who's a locked-out contributor to the CBC program Dimanche Magazine, and Cynthia, an organizer with the Immigrant Worker Center here in Montreal. Now, we've been talking about this issue of unequal pay within the CBC for women who are trained professionally, who come into Canada and are working as domestic workers. Why is it that, you know, it's 2002, we're on another International Workers' Day here, and we still have this issue of unequal pay, this disparity? Is it because men are still perceived as the head of household and therefore are the top wage earners? Chantel, you've been talking about this unequal pay within the CBC. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, actually, I must say, as I said before, it was a surprise for us because we thought that this was one field where a lot of progress had been made. And it was just a surprise to find out these figures, to discover these figures. And I don't know, one can only suspect that, as I said, maybe still a question, I mean, journalistic credibility is still perceived as a man thing. That's the only explanation we can find. And also maybe that women don't negotiate, are not as good negotiators. But, of course, we're not talking about as blatant situation of abuses like the ones mentioned by Cynthia. But the fact is, these are union jobs, and this is a field where we had the feeling that, I mean, this should not exist anymore. And I must say that yesterday at the press conference was a woman was present there, Aline Desjardins, who was a famous host at Radio-Canada in the 70s and in the 80s, and she was completely flabbergasted to discover that it was still going on, because not in 2002, and she was shocked. And also, a lot of unions have called us since and want to investigate the question in their union. For instance, the Canadian Guild of Medias, our sister union, which represents CBC's employees in the rest of the country, is conducting actually its own study. And TVA, also the union there, has showed some interest in investigating the matter. So I have the impression that we open a kind of a can of worms, if you want, because I think this will find some echoes elsewhere too.
Cynthia, why is it that the women who are receiving professional education abroad are coming into Canada and receiving these lower-paying jobs that don't match their professional training?
Well, first of all, like, because of the situation in the Philippines, the political and economic instability, like, for a lot of these women, a lot of them don't have a job, and even if they do, they, you know, it's not that the salary is not decent enough to provide for their family, even to eat like three times a day. And so the country, the Philippine government, doesn't really give them much of a choice. But it's a forced migration, basically. So these women, and men and women, are forced to leave the country. And basically, like, because there's that push, there's this factor that pushes them away from their country. There's countries like, for example, Canada, that's, you know, attracting them to come to Canada. But then there isn't much of a choice either for that's given by the Canadian government. They can come in. The Immigration Canada is saying that, well, they can come in as a, you know, independent immigrant, but only people that like has a lot of money and all that can apply for that kind of status. And so the only choice for them, for example, in Canada, is to come in as caregivers, because that's what the demand is. But a lot of the women that leave are people that leave the Philippines, end up working in the service sector, or domestic workers, factory workers. Some of them are even, you know, lured towards work as entertainers or sex workers, even with a. But because they're they don't have much of a situation to come back to in the Philippines, they have to stick with this situation that they have to put up with, and in this, for this instance in Canada, is the live-in caregiver, wherein they're not even categorized as a regular worker, as any Canadian worker. They don't have an immigrant status. And their status is pretty much is dependent on this live-in caregiver program fulfillment.
What do you think the possibility of changing the way women's work is able to unionize? You had talked about women, these domestic workers who are coming into the country not being able to unionize. But if we actually had a sort of feminization of the labor movement, you talked about the feminization of labor itself, but what would the feminization of a labor movement, if labor struggles did take up women's causes, which we are sort of seeing coming out of the CBC with the issues that they're raising about pay inequality, how would that change the work environment that domestic workers are experiencing here in Montreal?
Okay. Well, first of all, for a couple of years, PNAI, the women's Filipino women's group, had done a survey, and out of that, we saw that the women actually saw the need for them to be unionized, or at least have some kind of a union service that would even fight for their, you know, rights and welfare, because that we can't even count on, say, the Philippine government to protect their rights, and even the Canadian government doesn't give them much of a right as a worker here. And so what they saw was if Canada had needed caregivers and women would, because of the situation in Canada, will be in Philippines, would still be forced to come in and take up works like that, jobs like that. And if they, at least if there was some kind of a union service that would fight for their rights, there will be some kind of a support that would, a systematic kind of support that would fight for these women. Because right now what they have is, the only thing that they can count on is like the labor, norme de travail. And if they do have complaints or whatever, they do have to go there and file a complaint. But in the end, they're asked for like a record of the hours that they worked or whatever. They're living in their employer's home. And also, they're asked to produce a witness, for example, in this kind of situation. And if you're working in your, you're only seen by your employer the whole day, the witness would be the employer. And so it's going to be your word against your employer. And most of the time, it works against the employee's cause. So in the end, a lot of them don't complain because they're under the they're under, they don't want to jeopardize their situation of becoming, completing the 24 months and being eligible to apply for immigrant status, wherein eventually they'll be able to unite with their families.
Linda, the cooperative that you're working out in Point St. Charles, can you tell our listening audience what went into actually creating it, and how does the fact that it's a cooperative benefit the women who are working there?
Well, actually, as a member of a cooperative, you can vote. So all the girls, they have to be working like 52 days, and then after they access to the status of a member, and they can vote, and they can participate on the board of administrator after 200 days, working days. So that's about, 7 months. For a full-time job. So as a worker, when you can, you know, you have a power on your working conditions, I think that's really interesting. And this is something you cannot find usually when you work in, a cafe or in Montreal or anywhere, I think.
Power, but also an environment which you can actually have your children dropped off and picked up.
Comfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have power in your working environment, and it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's it. And that's really important. That's two basic conditions.
The environment at the CBC, Chantel, I wonder if you could tell our listening audience, what are you seeking to achieve in order to change the current working environment? Linda was just talking about, you know, the fact that you know, everyone has a vote, and it's the kind of environment that's friendly for women who have children and such.
Yes. Well, so far, if we talk about salary disparities, the CBC apparently has agreed to form an independent committee chosen by both sides to study the situation. So this is a first step, and that's what we feel it is, but of course it's not enough, and we want to make sure that it's not just a way to put aside the issue, and we will continue to monitor the situation closely. And also we have to mention that as long as there is not an agreement on all the points on the negotiation table, nothing is solved. So we may have some progress, but we don't feel that it's for sure enough. And I want to say also that besides this issue of salary discrimination, there is also the question of pay equity, the classic pay equity cases, you know, when you compare different jobs held by men compared to jobs done by women, for instance, production assistants to technicians. And in that case, we find that, for instance, there's a big salary difference between technicians and production assistants. And that's another issue, and it's an issue that is in front of the courts, actually, in front of the federal court. The case was filed in 98, and it's a case that reflects, if you want, the situation in what we call ghetto féminin, jobs that are mostly occupied by women. And this is also another battlefield, if you want. And we're following the situation closely. Also, in May, the federal court is supposed to hear the case. Not actually the case, because Radio-Canada is challenging the authority of this court to deal with this case. They say that it's a matter that should be solved within the negotiation of a collective agreement. But this is also another problem at the CBC. It's not only salary differences for similar jobs, well, actually identical jobs, but also when you compare different types of jobs that require similar abilities and similar background or experience. So it's a much more it's a wider problem than we thought.
If anyone wants to get a copy of the briefing notes on the conflict at the CBC, for example, one of the quotes that comes out of it is that for interviewers, 34 women at the CBC earn, on average, about $4,500 less than their 37 male colleagues. That's the majority of the women earning less than the men, and this is just one of several dozen statistics that are given within this documentation.
Yes.
If anybody wants a copy of that, or if they want to come out and support the striking workers, how can they get in touch, and where can they go for more information?
Well, first of all, they can. There's an internet site of the union where all the studies done are available. And also, what they can do if they want to do something is, I think the only solution is pressure politicians, pressure the CBC, send some letters, phone to complain about the situation, and if they want more information, of course, they can contact the union also.
Cynthia, what about the Immigrant Workers Center? If anyone wants to get in touch to learn more about this issue of domestic workers and the other topics that you talked about tonight, how can they reach the Immigrant Workers Center?
Okay. Basically, the Immigrant Workers is located here in Victoria, and they do have like a lot of education sessions and workshops. They can call Tess at 342-2111. And particularly with the domestic workers issues, they can contact PNAI, the Filipino Women's Organization. We have I'm the current chairperson also, and they could just contact me or PNAI with their transition home if they want to find out more information or any kind of support that they if they want to help out in deorganizing or.
Well, thank you both for joining us on the line. You've just heard from Cynthia, who's an organizer with the Immigrant Workers Center, and Chantel, just before that, a locked-out contributor to the CBC program, Dimanche Magazine. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank
you're
you
welcome.
Very much.
And lastly, goodbye to Linda, who's in studio with us. Thank you so much for coming up from Point St. Charles.
Thanks.
Can you tell our listeners out there where the cafe is if they want to come in and take in this environment and check out what a working cooperative is and see the place?
We're in Point St. Charles. The metro station is Charlevoix, and it's a 5 to 10 minutes walk, and the address is 1800 Center Street. Thank you, Gretchen.
Thank you very much, Linda.
Solidarity forever.
Blood shall run. There can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops.
You've been listening to the last episode of our four-part series on women's labor history in Quebec and Canada. Thank you to all the guests who were involved in today's program. Thanks again to Bianca Arlard, who produced the first three segments with Professor Lillian Robinson of the Simone de Beauvoir Institute, with Micheline Dumont and Maria Peluso as well. If you'd like to get copies of these episodes of this edition of the Long Term Memory Radio Project, you can contact the Spoken Word Department here at CKUT at 398-6787, extension 2593. Or you can email us at news@ckut.ca. Thanks again for tuning in to this edition of Long Term Memory Radio Project on CKUT's Off the Hour.
Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong.
In our hands is placed a power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong.